Madam President, I impose a call of the Senate.
Senate is under call. Senator Senjum.
Madam President, I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant of Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Today's chaplain is Reverend Paul Rogers, retired Lutheran pastor from Minneapolis. And following the prayer, please remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I intended to begin with a word from Psalm 23. I've considered changing that to the opening line from Psalm 13. How long, O Lord? How long? Nevertheless, from Psalm 23, God makes me lie down in green pastures, leads me beside still waters, and restores my soul. Let us pray. God of grace and peace, bless the members and staff of this Minnesota Senate as they seek to navigate between dreams and reality. They dream of resting in green pastures, but during these waning days of the session, they will be gathering here in this chamber, walking the hallways, sitting in offices and meeting rooms often late into the night. Bless them with energy to complete the journey. The still waters of the dream are stormy here, stirred by deep division of values and principles, of goals and methods. Bless them with a commitment to weather the storm through shared effort and common resolve. These women and men yearn for peaceful souls and satisfied spirits, but they're often burdened by pressures and stresses of limitations and schedules, expectations and conflict. Bless them with the fulfillment that comes from thoughtful consideration and actions of integrity. Yes, bless them all, O God. Move the realities nearer to the dreams. Restore their spirits. Still the waters. Keep them mindful that green pastures await them. Amen.
Pledge allegiance to the flag.
Sir, thank you.
See you tomorrow.
Yep.
Secretary will take the roll.
Senators Bach, Benson, Bonhoff, Brown, Carlson, Chamberlain, Cohen, Dames, Daly, DeKreif, Dibble, Dietzick, Eaton, Fischbach, Gazelka, Gerlach, Gimsey, Goodwin, Hall, Han, Harrington, Hayden, Higgins, Hoffman, Howe, Ingebrigtsen, Jungbauer, Kielash, Koch, Kunin, Cruz, Langseth, Latz, Lilly, Limmer, Laurie, Magnus, Marty, McGuire, Metzen, Michelle, Miller, Nelson, Newman, Nino, Olson, Ortman, Pappas, Perry, Peterson, Reinert, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Saxog, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Sparks, Stump, Thompson, Tomasoni, Torres, Ray, Vanderveer, Wieger, Wolf.
Quorum is present. Moving to the third order of business, messages from the House. The Secretary will read the first message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce that the House has acceded to the request of the Senate for the appointment of a conference committee consisting of three members of the House, on which amendments adopted by the House to this. On the amendments adopted by the House of the following Senate file number 1143, a bill for an act relating to state government. There has been appointed to such committee on the part of the House, Scott, Holberg, and Simon. Senate file number 1143 is herewith returned to the Senate. Albin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Senator There's no Senate action necessary on that message. The Secretary will read the next message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the House refuses to concur in the Senate amendments to House File Number 2171, a bill for an act relating to natural resources. The House respectfully requests that the Conference Committee of 5 members be appointed thereon. Heckbarth, Biskins, Cornish, McNamara, and Dill have been appointed to such committee on the part of the House. House File Number 2171 is herewith transmitted to the Senate with a request that the Senate appoint a like committee. Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that the Senate accede to the request of the House for a conference committee on House File 2171 and that a conference committee of 5 members be appointed by the Subcommittee on Conference Committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on part of the House.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Moving on to the fifth order, business reports of committee. Senate, there is a report to be read.
Senator Limmer from the Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety, which was referred the following appointment. Board of Judicial Standards, Terry Serio, reports the same back with a recommendation that the appointment be confirmed.
Senator Senjum. Oh, there.
Senator Limmer, also from the Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety, to which was referred the following appointment. Board on Judicial Standards, William Wernst, reports the same back without recommendation.
Senator Senjum.
Madam President, I move that committee reports be adopted with the exception of the reports pertaining to appointments.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Senjum.
Madam President, I move the appointments be laid on the table.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Seventh order of business, the second reading of House bills. They are printed on page 2 of today's Senate agenda, second reading. Moving to the eighth order of business, introduction and first reading of Senate bills. They are printed on today's Senate bill introductions. They will be referred as indicated, first reading. Moving to the ninth order of business, motions and resolutions. There are 2 Senate resolutions, number 155 and 156. They will be referred to rules, meaning under motions and resolutions. Senator Senjum.
Madam President, I move that House File number 2269 be taken from the table and given a second reading.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. House File 2269, second reading. Senator Senjum.
Madam Chair, I move that House File number 2279 be laid on the table.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. There are 2 authors' motions. The Secretary will read those motions.
Senator Thompson moves that his name be stricken as chief author, shown as the co-author, and the name of Senator Gazelka be added as chief author of Senate File Number 2310. Senator Thompson also moves that his name be stricken as chief author and shown as co-author and the name of Senator Newman be added as chief author of Senate File Number 2340.
We'll take those 2 motions as 1 motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motions do prevail. Meeting under motions and resolutions, Senator Senjum.
Madam President, I move under Rule 26 that the following bills be made special orders for immediate consideration. They are number 66 by Gazelka, number 8 by Limmer, and number 9 by Lori.
Senator Senjum has designated those House file and Senate files as special orders. We will begin with number 66 on the general orders calendar, House File 2136, Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam President. House File 2136 is the product of a collaborative effort on the part of the Alliance of Automobile Service Providers of Minnesota, the Insurance Federation of Minnesota, the Minnesota Automobile Dealers Association, and the Department of Public Safety. These are the entities that work closely with salvage title issues. They've made several changes to the statute to provide greater clarity in the administrative of the salvage title process. First, House File 2136, there was an amendment added that simply allows insureds to access their insurance policy information electronically, so if they're stopped by a police officer, you can show it on your smartphone. The changes to the salvage title statute provide greater clarity with respect to definitions, including clearly referencing the model years that manufacturers assign to vehicles rather than relying upon the year of the manufacturer. Next, insurance companies that take possession of the vehicle would have 10 days rather than 48 hours to report to the Department of Public Safety that they've taken possession. This, frankly, is more a current practice rather than a two-day timeline. A few other things, the threshold for requiring a salvage title is also simplified. The practice has been required reporting for a salvage title when the damage was in 70% of the vehicle's value. Now that will move to 80%. Prior, the airbag was excluded. Now it will be included. And finally, the effect in the marketplace will essentially be the same, but it will be more straightforward for everyone involved. Madam President, I'll stand for questions.
Further discussion on House File 2136. Secretary will give House File 2136 its third reading.
House File Number 2136, a bill for an act relating to motor vehicles, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on House File 2136. All those senators having voted. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 62 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Continuing on special orders, we will move to number 9 on the general orders calendar. Senate File 1761, Senator Lori.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Skipped over one there. But, Madam President, Senate File 1761 is brought to us by the City of Sandstone and the local Economic Development Authority. Back in 1994, the City Council and the EDA there built a multi-family housing development, and since that time they've actually struggled to keep it residencies up and keep it full, and it has deteriorated, as buildings tend to do over the 17 years. It's time for some fairly serious renovations, and the general obligations and revenue bonds that were issued to finance this project are actually larger right now than what the value of it is, but they have some interest from private developers to come in and buy this this multi-family
unit. Excuse me, Senator Lori, just 1 minute. There's been some signals that we're getting noisy and people can't hear, so I would ask members to be a little quiet so that they can hear Senator Lori. Thank you.
So at this point, they're pretty much kind of underwater, the way several of our homeowners are, and their outstanding obligations are more than the value of the building, and there's some interest within the city. It is not decided for sure whether they would sell, but this bill authorizes the City of Sandstone and the EDA to sell the Wild River Apartments to a private developer at fair market value. This development was initially financed, as I said, with revenue and geo bonds, some of which are still outstanding. And the city has been having trouble with the occupancy and the maintenance of the building. And because the revenues have not been enough to pay the bonds, the city is levying currently to pay these debt services. And so this bill essentially provides an exception to the public ownership requirement in order to facilitate the sale of this development. I should make note that there is no federal money or subsidies involved in this property, and the bill is supported by the City of Sandstone, the Sandstone City Council, and the Economic Development Authority. I would appreciate members' support.
Further discussion on Senate File 1761. Seeing none, the Secretary will give Senate File 1761 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1761, a bill for an act relating to local government, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 1761. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 63 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Remaining under special orders, move to number 8 on the general orders calendar, House File 2046, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President. House File 2046 is a DHS civil commitment data permitting purpose change. This bill requires the Department of Human Services to provide civil commitment information to law enforcement by electronic data transfer. This is new in referring to electronic data transfer for background checks for those people who are wishing to purchase explosives or black powder or blasting caps. The bill focuses on the need to assure the public's safety.
Further discussion on House File 2046. Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam President. I have the A2 amendment.
Senator Gazelka offers the A2 amendment. The Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Gazelka moves to amend House File Number 2046 as follows. Page 1 after line 17, insert. This is the A2 amendment.
Discussion to the A2 amendment. Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, this amendment, like the bill itself, relates to the data for public safety purposes. Earlier this session in Commerce Committee, Senator Limmer's bill to reinstate distilled spirits into Minnesota's so-called primary source liquor law. It's not that. The Department of Public Safety supports this bill because of its concerns about how recalls are handled. However, in the Commerce Committee, we were reluctant to pass the bill because we heard testimony from a liquor wholesaler whose business model is based on buying gray market alcohol. As a result, we on the committee did not include the primary source bill in the omnibus liquor bill. Nevertheless, there is a legitimate concern. Manufacturers of distilled spirits do not know whether recalls of their products are being completely and correctly carried out when a wholesaler buys products from someone other than the original manufacturer. So, in the spirit of finding some middle ground between not impeding free commerce and at the same time protecting public health and safety, I offer this amendment. The amendment simply gives the department the ability to collect information about gray market purchases made by a wholesaler. It does not do anything to hurt the wholesaler who engage in this trade or the retailers to whom sell the products. But it does ensure that there is an information clearinghouse for the manufacturers to track down their products when they issue a recall. Members, I ask for your support.
And members, may or may, it is very, very noisy in here, and we need to keep the level down so that we can hear the presenters. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President. I would accept this as a friendly amendment.
Further discussion to the A2 amendment. Senator Tomasoni.
Madam Chair, is this germane?
I'm sorry?
I think I want to challenge this on germaneness. I don't think this is germane. I think this, under Rule 35, greatly expands the purpose of the bill.
Advice for the chair. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President. In looking over the amendment, in comparison with the bill itself, both relate to data collection. Both enhance, for the purposes of enhancing the public safety, and both have the administration's support. Just thought I'd give you that as advice.
Senator Tomasoni.
Well, Madam President, I like the administration support part, but I don't think that has anything to do with germaneness. But Madam President, the amendment is actually longer than the bill, and the bill itself is about firearms, explosives, and background check, and so the new amendment deals with a whole different thing. It deals with alcohol and distilled spirits, and so as far as I know, firearms and alcohol and explosives don't mix, Madam President, and so this is definitely a bill that is not germane.
Senator Limmer?
Madam President, it's a good soundbite, Senator Tomasoni, but nevertheless, the bill was created to enhance public safety on products, and not that it's product liability, but products and the safety of our citizens is foremost. The product of whether it's alcohol or whether it's explosives, they both have dire consequences in the wrong hands. The Gazelka bill is very different from my bill. It does nothing to close any of the primary source practice in Minnesota, but it's focused on the data collection and enhancing public safety.
Madam President.
Further advice, Senator Tomasoni?
Unless you're going to rule in my favor. But Madam President, the title of the bill, pertaining to law enforcement access electronic data for background checks for an applicant for a permit to possess explosives. The bill is about getting a permit to accept explosives, and the amendment is about distilled spirits reporting. One's about alcohol, one's about dynamite. They are not the same. This greatly expands the scope of the bill.
I am going to rule the amendment non-germane. It is just too far from the general purpose of the bill. Further discussion on House File 2046.
Madam President.
Senator Limmer.
Madam President, I'd like to introduce the A3 amendment.
Senator Limmer offers the A3 amendment. The Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Limmer moves to amend House File Number 2046 as follows, page 1 after line 6, insert Section 1, Minnesota Statutes. This is the A3 amendment.
To the amendment, Senator Limmer.
Madam President, this is a request by the administration when it comes to any reference of explosives, whether or not we advance a fireworks bill or not. This is to make sure that in this subdivision does not apply to minors employed in any type of retail store setting.
Further discussion to the amendment.
Mike was on too.
Senator Limmer renews his motion. The amendment be adopted. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Further discussion on House File 2046. Secretary will give House File 2046 its third reading.
House File Number 2046, a bill for an act relating to public safety, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on House File 2046. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 64 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Remaining under motions and resolutions, we will take up several conference committee reports. We'll begin with Senate File 2296, Senator Chamberlain.
Madam President, members, I move that the foregoing recommendation and conference committee report on Senate File 2296 now be adopted and the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee.
Discussion to that motion, Senator Chamberlain.
Madam President, members, this was the bill that we had a discussion on the other day. The initial report from the conference committee, there was some this body decided that we had not properly followed process and procedure, so it was re-referred back to conference committee. In the conference committee, we removed one of the three amendments that they had added in the House. We removed specifically the amendment requiring or changing the primary date from August to June. So that is no longer in this bill. However, we did retain the party candidate certification date change, which both parties will need due to convention dates and election day. If we don't have that, again, we may not get our VEEPs on the ballot. Secondly, we also retained the prohibited activities of a political party. That would remove the ability for political parties to fine or sanction candidates, preventing them from running for office.
Just information for the members. In your folders, there are, I understand there are several conference committee reports on 2296, but we are working off of the one marked C. So in the corner, it would be 2296C if you are looking for that in your folders. Further discussion? Senator Marty.
Madam President, Senator Chamberlain, with the Section 3, the prohibited activities of the political party, was there any further discussion of that when you went back to conference committee? Because this is one I understand the purpose of it, but I think the language is so broad that it would have an unconstitutional restriction on the parties. In other words, I don't know how a party, the situation that was apparently being addressed was something I thought was already illegal, and that is somebody charging a candidate a certain amount of money if they were to file for office, which I can't see how you could charge somebody, and if you did, I think it's already illegal. But the trouble is, in here, the language you're using is they may not impose or threaten to impose any fine, sanction, or other penalty. And if there's a person who is, say, a national committee member or any kind of party officer or something, it seems to me saying that if they're going to run against a party candidate that you might remove them from that party office, that's clearly a sanction. Mr. President, I think Senator Chamberlain is having trouble hearing because of the noise.
Members, please, let's keep it down so that we can hear the debate on the floor. Thank you.
Mr. President, thank you. And the question is, was there any discussion of this? Because it seems to me that this would prohibit a party from doing something that I think would clearly be within their free speech rights, such as, since it bans them from any sanction, the word any is in there, sanction or other penalty, to attempt somebody who does not have the party's official endorsement to prevent them from filing. And it seems to me that saying, you know, if you run for office against our party's candidate, we're not going to let you serve on our party executive committee or hold a party office or something like that, that would clearly be illegal here, and I can't see how we constitutionally can do that. And I'm wondering if there was any discussion in the conference committee about this point.
Senator Chamberlain.
Mr. President, Senator Marty, yes, there was further discussion, and we asked counsel about this specifically, and Secretary of State's representative was there as well, Beth Frazier. We discussed this piece, and in part, when it says official endorsement as a means to prevent the individual from filing for office, as a candidate for office, that was taken into consideration, as well as the fact that we have current law that prohibits offering a reward to someone to run or not run for public office. So this was seen as as the other side of that. Instead of a reward, a penalty. So we're prohibiting the penalty. And the intent is to prohibit a penalty in those circumstances. And we tried to, that's the intent, kept it narrow. We had discussion. And because of those two reasons, it was unanimous that we'd keep it in.
Senator Marty.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Chamberlain, I understand, as I said, the reason for it. I think there's a decent chance that the current law would address the situation you were talking about. I'm not the attorney. I don't know that that's the case. But clearly, the party would not be able to remove a person from, that would be a sanction, it seems to me, by anybody's definition, to take somebody's party office away from them for doing something like this. And to me, that's an absolute free speech, a fundamental free speech issue. I can't see how this is constitutional. I understand what the intent is, and I understand the rest of the bill. I think I'm going to vote against it just because I think it is unconstitutional. I hope that, assuming this thing does pass, I hope that next year somebody will come back and say, you know, we shouldn't be passing these things that restrict it. I understand what the intent is, but I think the language goes far beyond what the intent is and does some unconstitutional things to the parties as well.
Senator Chamberlain.
Mr. President, Senator Marty, thank you for the comments and concern. As I said, The Secretary of State was in the room, and we had counsel there as well. And I think the intent is correct, and the endorsement language in there is what we're getting at. The caveat to this is this is not a reason not to do this, but this is really critical legislation. The certification dates need to go through. Else, both parties will have problems getting some candidates on the ballot at the national level. So I would still urge a green vote. Thank you.
Further discussion on the motion? Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just wanted to address also Senator Marty's concerns because I was one of the conferees. And apparently this provision, it was a Winkler Amendment, and it was extensively debated on the House floor, and in the conversation we did ask counsel whether or not it was constitutional because we did support the intent and we supported the strong language. There have been stories of late where there has been significant pressure put on people not to file or not to act one way or another with regard to their own candidacies, and we wanted to make certain that that was not the case and put language in there that would prohibit that. And Senator Marty, with regard to holding a party office, in most cases, I believe those people who hold party office are there by election, and so the recourse a party has is when that person's term is over, they would choose not to elect them if their actions are not in keeping with the standards their party has.
Senator Marty.
Mr. President, Senator Bonhoeff, I'm not arguing with what the intent of this was, nor do I think it's appropriate for some party. I still haven't figured out the news story. I heard that a candidate was being charged money by the party. I don't know why the candidate would pay the money. But somehow being fined, if that's not illegal, I don't have a problem with somebody trying to do that. However, there are, regardless of what the discussion was, this says more than that in saying, well, somebody who was elected to a party office, well, they could just not elect them next time. Frankly, I have a feeling both major parties in this state and probably any state would take action against one of their party officers who's doing something like this and say, well, you can do it next time. We don't take away their free speech like that. That's a constitutional right they have. I'm not arguing that the rest of the bill is not good or that the intent here isn't good. I'm arguing I think you've got an unconstitutional provision in there. I'm voting against it because of a protest for that, not that the rest of the bill is bad, nor that your intent here was, but that the language is bad.
Senator Vanderveer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Chamberlain, yield for a question.
He will yield.
Senator Chamberlain, is this intended to say that a party does not have the right to control its own lists? Is that the intent of this, having this in the bill?
Senator Chamberlain.
Mr. President, Senator Vanderveer, the intent is not to say they can't control their own lists. They can still certainly control their lists and their data, but the effect of imposing a fine or a penalty, whatever you want to call it, if they don't do X, has a, if I might use a legal term, a chilling effect on that candidate and might prevent them from running or discouraging them from running, a penalty for running for office. So they can still control their list. Has no intent, nothing in this language suggests that, just says you cannot impose that fine, which would have a chilling effect and discourage people from running for office in a primary, which they certainly have a right to do, and they could pay the fine, but this opens it up and says, you know, you can't do that.
Senator Chamberlain renews his motion that the foregoing recommendations and conference committee report on Senate file number 2296 be now adopted and that the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee. All in favor signify by saying aye. All opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. We'll go to the third reading.
Senate file number 2296, a bill for an act relating to elections. Third reading.
Further discussion. Seeing none, Secretary will take the roll.
All senators having voted who desire to vote, secretary will close the roll. There being 48 ayes and 14 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Pursuant to Rule 12.5, Senator Fischbach moved that the following members be excused for a conference committee on Senate file number 1573 at 5:30 p.m. Senators Fischbach, Carlson, Miller, Roebling, and Tomasoni. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign, motion prevailed. Moving on, remaining on motions and resolutions, number two, Senate file number 2334, Senator Vanderveer.
Mr. President, I move that the foregoing recommendation and conference committee report on Senate file number 2334 be now adopted and that the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee.
To that motion, Senator Vanderveer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, this bill is intended to provide more transparency in reports on lobbying expenditures by primarily utilities. It allows the separate reporting of administrative versus legislative lobbying expenditures. The report is signed by all the conferees and is essentially the same as when it left the Senate. Appreciate your support.
Further discussion? On the motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Secretary will give Senate File 2334 its third reading.
Senate File Number 2334, a bill for an act relating to lobbying, third reading.
Further discussion? Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted who desire to vote, all senators having voted who desire to vote, secretary will close the roll. There being 61 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Reverting to messages from the House, secretary will read the messages.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce that the House has adopted the recommendation report of the conference committee on House File Number 2244 and repassed said bill in accordance with the report of the committee. So adopted, House File Number 2244, a bill for an act relating to the Permanent School Fund. House File 2244 is herewith transmitted to the Senate Alvin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Senator Cruz.
Mr. President, I move that the foregoing recommendations on conference committee the conference committee report on House File 2244 be now adopted and the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee.
To that motion, Senator Cruz.
Members, before us, we have House File 2244, the School Trust Lands Management Conference Committee. I have to be honest with you, when we went into this conference committee, I don't think I've ever seen two bills that were further apart than this. I'm extremely proud of the work that we've been able to do. What I'd like to do, because there were some significant language changes, but substantially, what we have in front of us is the Senate bill. I'd like to just briefly walk through that with you for a second and then take any questions. If I could direct you to Section 3, it's a Senate, two of the Senate provisions. Section 3 provides that the forest protection costs will not be certified against the permanent school fund, and that before any costs are certified, they must be presented to a newly created legislative permanent school fund commission. This section also requires that the certification report include a comparison with other public and private forest lands. These are both provisions that were in the Senate bill. On to Section 4. This provides additional goals of management for school trust lands and directs the Department of Natural Resources to choose maximizing long-term revenue when goals for school trust lands are in conflict. If the DNR does not compensate the trust for designations or policies that prohibit the maximization of long-term revenue by July 1st in 2018, the commissioner must report a list of the lands that must be compiled and submitted to the new commission. Essentially what this is we have a large portion of our school trust lands that are not performing. What we've required, and this is Senate language, what we've required here is that those be defined and be purchased out by 2018. In negotiation with the department, what we did was we extended that term for an additional 2 years. On top of that, we also gave a little bit of leeway. The department was concerned that we were putting a mandate here that they wouldn't be able to comply with because they have no means to fund this. They rely on the bodies for the appropriation of those dollars. So what we've done instead then is we've requested that a report be filed with the new legislative commission, which I'm going to go into in a little bit here, and that they would then be able to act legislatively on those. On to Section 5, this exempts school trust lands from the general prohibition on sales of state lands bordering public waters without legislative approval. This is new language. This was actually a request from the Department of Natural Resources. This is kind of one of our pieces that we gave them in the negotiations. Section 7. Section 7 is House language, but I was completely comfortable with that, and I believe the other conferees were as well. What Section 7 does is it creates a legislative permanent school trust fund commission. This commission is made up of 6 members from the House, 6 members from the Senate, 3 from each of the minority and the majority party. This is very, very similar to what we had created in the Senate language. The only difference here is that ours was a citizen legislative commission, whereas this is just strictly made up of legislators. The reason that I felt comfortable negotiating this out and letting them have the strictly legislative commission is because what you're going to notice here a little further down, we create a director position, which is essentially our advisor position, but now we allow them to hire 5 staff. The major concern that we had over here in the Senate is we wanted to make sure that we had that private sector knowledge at the table. We are now able to do that with these 5 potential employees for the new director that we've created. They're going to be able to bring that citizen expertise to the table. On to Section 9, Subdivision 1. Again, this is Senate language. It directs the new commission to recommend policies to the school trust lands director and the Department of Natural Resources that are consistent with the Minnesota Constitution, state law, and goals established under state law. Subdivision 2, also another Senate provision, provides for the school trust lands director and the DNR to recommend to the governor and legislature any necessary or desirable changes in law. Subdivision 3 is new language, so I'd like to go through that just a second. Subdivision 3 provides that the school trust lands director has the duty to report to the governor and the legislative permanent school funds commission on any irreconcilable disagreements on the school trust lands management with the DNR. Essentially, what this language is saying, members, is that if there's a conflict between this newly created director and the commissioner at the Department of Natural Resources, that that director would be able to at least inform the governor and this newly created legislative commission on what those differences are. Moving on to Section 10, Subdivision 1. Again, this is Senate language. It provides that the school trust lands director, which we in our language were calling it advisor, but this is essentially the same position, is appointed by the governor. The commissioner of management and budget shall provide a space and administrative services to the director. The director is subject to the advice and consent of the Senate. This is very similar to the Senate language. As I mentioned, we're just calling the advisor a director. There is a little bit of movement. Instead of having it in MMB, we now move this position over to the Department of Administration. We just felt like that was probably a better place if we were looking for oversight. On to Subdivision 2 of Section 10. This is half new language and half Senate language, so again, I'm going to go over this very quickly. Subdivision 2 of Section 10 provides for the qualifications of the school trust lands director and provides that the director's term is 4 years. The director's term will end at the midterm of the governor. The director may be removed for cause. The language that came over from the Senate in that is obviously we have the 4 year term of this director position. The new language comes in the fact that we have now staggered that director's term in between governors. The reason that we went that direction was we were hoping that that's going to create some stability in the position. And as we transition from potentially one governor to another, you'll have some consistency there in how the trust lands are being managed. Subdivision 4 of Section 10, again, this is new language, so I'm going to go over this very briefly. This provides for the duties of the new director, including, and this is that kind of that hybrid position of what was our advisor. We're now calling a director. Most of these are things that came over in the Senate, but there are a couple of new ones, so I'll go through these. Evaluating the school trust land asset position. Advising the governor, executive council, commissioner of natural resources, legislature, and the new legislative permanent school funds commission on managing school trust lands, and developing a 10-year strategic plan and a 25-year framework for the management of the school trust lands that must be updated every 5 years. That last one is extremely important. That is the new language that came over in that section. Essentially, members, what we've said here is this director is now responsible for putting in place some broad planning. This is going to help the commissioner move forward as he or she decides how to manage these school trust lands. Again, this is going to be a 10 and a 25-year strategic plan. The director may employ up to 5 employees, as I mentioned before. Moving on to Section 10, again, this is half Senate language, half new language. Section 11 provides that the cost of the new director, including staff costs and legislative permanent school fund commission, to be from the state forest development account, the suspense account, and the minerals management account. The director and commission shall submit to the 2014 legislature a plan for certifying their costs using revenue from the school trust lands. That last sentence is the new language in there, members. Essentially why this came about is we're trying to be very considerate of our constitutional obligations here and how what we're doing in the permanent school trust funds interacts with the Constitution. In the Constitution, we do have a timber account that we're allowed to assess some of these costs to. But essentially, we are not allowed to do that with minerals. So what we do is we have this minerals account here, and we are recommending that there be a plan put in place to kind of lock that down for generations moving forward. Members, that essentially is the bill. I would just like to first and foremost say thank you to my conferees, Senators Bach, Senator Olson, Senator Thompson, Senator Carlson. I appreciate all their work on this. I also would like to thank the commissioner. He sat at the table with us almost till midnight on a couple of occasions working through this, and I sincerely appreciate that. I'd also like to thank my author over in the House and his conferees, Representative O'Driscoll. And then I'd also like to say a special thank you to my House member, Representative Denise Dietrich, who's worked tirelessly on this issue. And I just would like to thank her for all her hard work. This couldn't have been done without her. I'd like to thank Senator Wieger in the Senate, who has chaired this advisory commission at times that currently exists. We couldn't have done this without a lot of bipartisan support, and I'd appreciate a green vote. It's a great bill.
Further discussion? Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a couple of questions for Senator Cruz, if he may yield.
He will yield.
Thank you. Senator Cruz, could you please clarify, are we now expanding the responsibility so that we will have six new state employees, the director plus five new positions that will work with this office? And according to the record, a director position could be about $100,000. So the cost of this particular change that you're making to this legislation will increase perhaps expenditures for these particular purposes for about $500 million.
Senator Cruz.
Mr. President and Senator Torres Ray, you are correct. In this legislation, we do allow for this new director position, and he or she would have the ability to hire up to potentially five employees. We have capped that at five. And I would also like to mention that those employees are going to be subject to the budget process. So ultimately, the budget that we are going to give this new director, they will have to work within the confines of that budget. Another thing I'd like to mention, I think it's important as we look at our fiduciary obligations here, we have done a lot of great things in this bill. Specifically, one of the ones that I'm thinking of right off the top of my head is the removal of this fire suppression. That's going to yield $2 million a year into the trust account. So what the hopes is, Mr. President and Senator Torres Ray, is that as we get these independent eyes on the school trust fund, this director and his or her five employees, we will find more efficiencies. We will generate more revenue for the trust account.
Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just cannot hear very well because there's a lot of noise.
Members, please, let's keep it down. We're having a hard time hearing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just want to call the members' attention to this because I think it's important that we recognize that we have not received any information with respect to how the new management of these lands really will yield better results. We never received that information yet. We will be investing tremendous amount of money to change the current composition of this management division without really knowing whether or not we will get more funding. So we are already in legislation authorizing the use of funding of current dollars to expand government and to expand this office for purposes that we really don't know we are going to get. And the second piece, members, that I want to call your attention to is that it is clear that in this legislation, it gives the commissioner the authority to give precedence to the long-term economic return in the management of the trust lands, meaning that the economic interest surpasses the interest of the management of the lands, which is very problematic, and DNR has been really balancing this very carefully in the past. So I think this is a very problematic piece of legislation that could cost a lot of money to the state of Minnesota, and we need to exercise some caution here.
Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. President and members. I'd like to take just a second and address Senator Torres' raised concerns. First and foremost, she mentioned that we haven't been made aware of how the management is going to be different. I think it's important to point out as we address that the lands will continue, as in the Senate bill when it went over, be managed by the Department of Natural Resources. And as a matter of fact, to speak specifically to her question, we've done some great things here with riparian land and also these fire suppression costs that are going to unshackle the hands of our commissioners moving forward and allow them to manage the school trust lands in a more fiduciary nature. Secondly, to Senator Torres' race, second concern about managing these assets and finding that delicate balance. Mr. President, Senator Torres-Ray, I agree with you. And I agree with you because I believe that if we don't manage these assets to keep them sustainable and around for generations to come, they will not be able to yield revenue for the school trust funds. And ultimately, that is what our fiduciary obligation is. I don't see how you accomplish that goal without making sure that these renewable resources and these lands stay around. And for that exact reason, I'd like to point members, and I'll go ahead and read this very quickly, to line 7.26 to 7.29 of the legislation, and I'm hoping this will address those concerns. The trustee must be concerned with both income for the current beneficiaries and the preservation of trust assets for future beneficiaries, which requires a balancing of short-term and long-term interests so that the long-term benefits are not lost in an effort to maximize short-term gains.
President. Senator Marty.
Mr. President, thank you. I distributed a letter from several environmental and natural resource and conservation groups expressing concerns about the bill. And there are a couple of points I'd like to make briefly about the concerns. One of which is this is creating a new, how big of a bureaucracy, I don't know, but a new group that's going to take money from the school permanent school trust fund. And the biggest point is, why is this being done so quickly now? The legislative auditor is supposed to be looking at management of the permanent school fund, school lands, and how we manage that, and they're reporting back to us next year. So why we're trying to push this through now, again, doing it in conference committee without the consultation from the conservation and the environmental groups and so on. And a couple of the provisions that that I think should raise concern with us is, one, it certainly sounds like they're talking about using legacy funds and environmental trust fund dollars, because you use the term non-general funds, that they're talking about using those funds to compensate the school trust fund. And that's not the purpose of those. When the Constitution dedicated funds were put in place, that was not the intent of it, and I guess I have real questions about that. And also the provision in Section 5 that the lakeshore properties that are school trust lands, that those would be available for sale without legislative approval. I don't think this is a step forward. I think that's why the conservation and resource groups and environmental groups are expressing concerns about it. And that is that we shouldn't be racing to do this now. We should wait for the legislative auditor's report and take input from everybody involved about it. I think when we're making a choice between raising more money from the lands and protecting the environment, I think we should be looking at both of them and not dumping on one in order to potentially raise some more money for the other. So I'd urge members to reject this. I hope you'll take a minute to read over the letter that was distributed. Thank you.
President.
Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have similar concerns as my colleagues, Senator Torres-Ray and Senator Marty, but I also have concerns about this makeup of the Legislative Commission. We have no citizens that are involved on this commission, and we are a this is an these are dealing with issues that really involve our citizens, and so I think that citizens should be on this commission. And I have was wondering if Senator Cruz would yield for a question.
He'll yield.
Thank you, Senator Cruz. Senator Cruz, I know you had a hearing on this. I'm guessing that it was publicized. But I'm wondering, when you were in the hearing and when you were hearing about, when you were putting together this bill that had different provisions from the House and the Senate, what did the environmental groups say in testimony when you were on the conference committee? What did they say about this bill in the conference committee?
Senator Cruz.
Mr. President and Senator McGuire, we had none of the environmental groups that were listed on this letter that Senator Marty come forward and asked to testify before the conference committee. We had hours and hours, I mean probably 20 hours worth of testimony. We were there, I know, almost till midnight one night. And I know that the commissioner works very closely with these groups as well. And like I mentioned, we did our best as we move forward in this conference committee to put some of those concerns to rest. I read you the language specifically that was put in there to address that. There's multiple other places in the legislation where that's included. So we really did address those concerns to the best of our ability. I'd like to take a minute just to speak to Senator Marty waiting. Members, this has been 150 years in the making. We have seen these trust lands get absolutely devastated. We have used them to fund things that we should not fund. Our kids don't have time to wait. Every year that goes by that we do not allow the corpus of this trust fund to grow is a year lost. And anybody who's an investment knows the sooner, the earlier you can make those corrections, the higher yield you're going to get moving forward. I think we have a great bill here that balances both environmental concerns and fiduciary concerns moving forward. And also, Senator Marty, I think about Mr. President and Senator Marty, I think about our fiduciary obligation. And specifically, I think about the potential for a lawsuit against us as a state, against the governor, the commissioner, us as a legislature. We have not been acting as a fiduciary for these trust funds. We have commingled funds. We have commingled lands. And There's a lot of talk out there that folks are tired of that, and they're going to raise some of those concerns. And legislatively, we have an opportunity right now to alleviate some of those concerns. So, Mr. President and Senator Marty, respectfully, I would say we can't wait. As a fiduciary, we have an obligation to act now.
Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Cruz, I've been up on the Senate floor quite a bit this session to make sure that we do have a process that includes the public, and I'm glad you had a posted hearing and that you met in the public. And sometimes, you meet for long hours, but if you don't invite public testimony, if you don't ask if there's anybody that wants to speak on it, then you don't hear from them. I'm concerned that they were not speaking in the committee, that they perhaps weren't given the opportunity to speak in committee. So I just want to make us all aware that we really ought to be making opportunities for people to share their concerns on these bills that we're passing. And then I do have another concern with this bill that hasn't been highlighted as much is that it allows the use of legacy funds. Mr. President, members, we have, the public voted for the tax that supports our legacy funds, and there are specific purposes for that, and I do not believe that we should be using it to fund the Permanent School Trust Fund, that it would be making up any of that difference. And so I do have another question for Senator Cruz, if Senator Cruz would yield.
He will yield.
So, Senator Cruz, do you have an idea of how much legacy money you think may be used for this fund? This is, I think it's not an appropriate use for the funds.
Senator Cruz.
Mr. President and Senator McGuire, this is the beginning of a process. Nowhere in this legislation does it say that legacy funds are going to be used or shall be used or mandate that legacy funds be used for the purpose of school trust funds. Specifically what you're referring to, if we move through this process and we find that these lands which are underperforming do need to be purchased out, we're going to look at whether that be federal dollars or state dollars or whatever it takes to get these lands bought out, because that's what our obligation is as a fiduciary to the school children of Minnesota. So with respect to, nowhere does this say that those legacy funds have to be used to purchase school trust lands.
Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. President. What your bill does say, Senator Cruz, is that it requires that the DNR commissioner recommend compensation to the trust from state non-general funds. And those funds do include legacy funds and environmental trust funds. So maybe I could just get your impression on the Senate floor. Then would you intend that this not include legacy funds?
Senator Cruz.
Mr. President and members, I think we should look at every fund available to meet our fiduciary obligation.
Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. President. Then I'm doubly concerned that we would attempt to use legacy funds, environmental trust funds for this fund when that is not the intended purpose for those funds. So I encourage members to vote no on this bill.
Senator Metzen.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. Senator Cruz, it seems like you've got $500,000 at least in this bill that somebody's going to have to pay, and it's the taxpayers. And every time we ask a department to do some additional duties, we have to add 5 employees or 10 employees or 8 employees. And this is going to be administered by what, the Department of Administration? Okay, Senator Cruz, do you know how many people they have on their staff today?
Senator Cruz.
Mr. President, members, no, I don't know how.
Well, I don't know either, but let me take a stab at it.
Senator Metzen.
1,000 to 2,000. Now, it just seems to me that save the taxpayers some money, and I know these are hardworking people over there at the Department of Administration, but it just seems to me that we can find 5, even if we keep this new administrator that's going to cost $110,000 or what have you, plus benefits. We could save $400,000 by utilizing the 1,000 to 2,000 people we have in that department. I mean, let's not, every time we do something like this, we need 3 more employees or 8 or 10. We've got thousands of state employees, and they're hardworking and they're good employees, trust me. But let's try to utilize the staff, the existing staff we have already.
Senator Cruz.
Mr. President and Senator Metzen, well, if we're dealing with a couple thousand, what's a few more? Oh, no, 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 no. No, the reason that, the reason, and you and I, Mr. President and Senator Metzen, you and I have talked about this on multiple occasions, and we're actually in agreement on this. The reason that we had to set this director and these potential 5 employees aside in this language is specifically for the reason that they are not getting charged to the taxpayers. These funds to pay for this director and these 5 new employees, potentially 5 new employees, there's no mandate in here that this director has to hire any employees. They could do it all themselves. But those, the cost of those will be assessed against the school trust fund. And I think in this legislation we found good balance in that, because we have corrected some of those things, like the fire suppression against the account, that will allow the corpus of the fund to continue to grow even as we make these short-term investments for the long-term gains.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, before I make the point I rose to, I have to respond to a couple of things. First, Senator Cruz represented that somehow the environmental community either wasn't interested or didn't ask to testify on this bill. In fact, folks who did testify on this bill were, of course, the DNR, but also representatives of the School Boards Association and representatives of lobbying interests who represent those who are interested in harvesting and harnessing natural resources. In fact, the environmental community was very interested and was very engaged in testifying in this conference committee and wasn't permitted to do so. So, Mr. President, that just needs to be stated on the floor into the record, because I think Senator Cruz made a representation that just simply isn't accurate. And in fact, there are significant environmental implications, and to say that somehow the environmental community wasn't engaged or wasn't interested in testifying, providing their perspective, would be a serious matter to leave unaddressed. Secondly, a few days ago, I got up and talked about a $500,000 assessment that goes to support the community energy resource teams, and said it was a little bit of money, and quickly Senator Rosen jumped up and said $500,000 is in fact a lot of money, and I stood corrected. So Senator Cruz, a few thousand here, a few thousand there, this is all public money. It's all significant dollars, and every dollar needs to be guarded, and we have a significant fiduciary responsibility and a significant trust that we keep, and we are creating a significant new bureaucracy, and it represents hundreds of thousands of dollars, and to be casual and flip about that is unwarranted. Senator Cruz, Section 5, it says all state lands bordering on or adjacent to meandered lakes and other public waters and watercourses, etc., are withdrawn from sale except for, and what it does, Senator Cruz, is subjects all riparian lands to legislative approval. And it does that for a fairly significant reason, because we know that riparian state lands need to be treated with some care and consideration to protect our watersheds, our wildlife habitat, shorelines, scenic features. We know what's happening, and we know, of course, that the sporting community, the hunting community, is extremely concerned about the impact of our surface waters on the quality of habitat and their ability to hunt, and that the effect on our economy. Why would we treat these lands so differently, Senator Cruz? Why would we exclude the school trust lands from that long-standing policy that when we sell riparian lands, we subject them to at least a minimal amount of legislative scrutiny?
Senator Cruz to that point.
Thank you, Mr. President. And to Senator Dibble's point, I'll take the first part first. Senator Dibble, this legislation has been through more committees than any bill I have carried in my term here as senator. There was plenty of opportunities for all of the involved, all interested parties to be involved. I would also like to make it clear to the body that I was never approached by any of the groups that you are mentioning to testify at the conference committee. I want to make that very clear to the body. There was no effort made to shut those groups out at all from the discussion. Secondly, to the second part of Senator Dibble's question is, why would we treat these lands so differently? That is a very easy question. Because school trust lands constitutionally are mandated to be managed for profit so that the corpus of the fund can grow and fund education for future generations of children. We have a fiduciary and very legal obligation to treat these lands separately.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. President. Well, Senator Cruz, the conference committee is where the final decisions get made and the final bill is crafted, and the final bill that we are voting on now is the bill that ultimately gets passed to the governor. And so just because there had been many committee hearings previous to that point, doesn't mean that then folks simply get left out of the room when the final decisions and the final language. In fact, a whole, as you represented in the presentation of your bill, this bill is significantly different than when it left this chamber initially. And the environmental community is quite clear to me that they were kept out of the room and not permitted to testify. And I think whether or not folks approached you, which they tell me they did, or at least attempted to testify or not, it's incumbent upon us to make sure all the stakeholders who are looking out for the best interests of Minnesota, from whatever their perspective is, are consulted. That's what we do in a democracy, and that's what we do in deliberation in a deliberative body. We don't simply ramrod language through. And Senator Cruz, to your final point, we have a balance of responsibilities here, and your bill completely throws that balance out of whack. Senator Torres-Ray spoke earlier, Senator Marty and others spoke earlier. When we stick in language like undivided loyalty to the beneficiaries, maximizing the long-term return and protecting natural resources over any environmental concerns, we lose perspective and we lose balance. And even though we perhaps can cause great benefit financially to the school trust, and to the profits of those interests who want to come in and take advantage of those natural resources, it's gone. Those resources are gone, and we use them all up today, and they're not available as a natural resource to benefit future generations, either economically or environmentally. And so your bill simply throws the whole balance out of whack. And it's ill-advised. We could have gotten to a better outcome that does strike the balance, the trust that we find in the Constitution, and we find also in terms of our responsibility as legislators to maintain our environment and our natural resources.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to enter into this particular discussion that Senator Dibble has been raising, and I think others have made some comments before about, particularly I picked up, I'm not sure who made the statement, that we should not be using any legacy funds to enhance the Permanent School Trust Fund. I think we're missing what Senator Cruz has been trying to stress. Now, I know this is kind of a boring subject. I think there's a lot of conversations going on and people aren't necessarily paying any attention, but we do have a constitutional and fiduciary responsibility to maximize the revenues from these lands in the interest of the children, the beneficiaries in the state of Minnesota. Let me give you a couple examples. One is we've got old growth forests that have been designated by this legislature and the department with great pressure that absolutely will have no income. None whatever, Senator Dibble, that no income whatever for the Permanent School Trust Fund. Now that to me would be a very good place for some of the legacy funds to be invested and buy those from the trust so that they can be preserved to achieve the goals that we want for the next generation in maintaining some of these old growth forests. But to expect that the trust should bear that burden, just wait. I think as the elevated interest in this trust obligation becomes known, I think the lawsuits will come. And I think we will lose. The same could be said for some of the riparian lands that have great value, but no, they shouldn't be touched. They shouldn't generate any income for that trust fund lands. We are working now with the federal government to try to either exchange or sell lands that are in the Boundary Waters Canoe Area because those are held hostage again and are doing nothing to enhance the Permanent School Trust Fund. And that's part of the mission that we've been trying to work on, to how do we get either traded or sale and get so that money can be invested in either in other lands or where there is a return on that investment for the children in this state. It is our fiduciary responsibility. It is a legal one. And I don't be surprised if we aren't challenged, if we don't pay attention. And when we have some of the tools to do that, we should be doing it. So I would hope that you would rethink your views that nothing should be done and that the school trust should be able to sit on this and nothing happen just for just a you know, an enjoyment or appreciation into the future rather than for the income that these were intended to bring to the school children of Minnesota.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, Senator Olson, I simply have to again correct the record. I think you've completely misrepresented the arguments that have been made by myself, by Senator McGuire, Senator Torres Rey, Senator Marty, and others. No one has said don't touch these lands. People are simply saying there needs to be an appropriate balance. Senator Cruz's bill is completely out of whack and does not provide for that kind of balance. So I think you vastly overstated the case and misrepresented the arguments. And the fact that crucial stakeholders were kept out of this discussion is reflected in the language of this bill.
Senator Cruz renews his motion that the foregoing recommendations and conference committee report on House File Number 2244 be now adopted and that the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Secretary will give House File 2244 its third reading.
House File Number 2244, Bill for an Act Relating to the Permanent School Fund, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators voting who desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 42 ayes and 20 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Moving on to reports of committees, Secretary will read the reports.
Senator Roebling from the Committee on Finance, to which was re-referred Senate File 2391, a bill for an act relating to stadiums, reports the same back with the recommendation that the bill be amended as follows, and when so amended, the bill be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes without recommendation.
Senator Senjum.
Move to adopt.
Madam President, I move the reports be adopted.
On that motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign. Remaining under motion, Senator Bach.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that House File 2022, number 10 on general orders, be stricken and laid on the table.
On that motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, Mr. President, I would move for a brief recess for purposes of appointing a conference committee.
On the motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Senate is in recess. Senate is in order. Senator St. John.
Mr. President, is there a privilege report at the desk?
There is. Senator St. John from the subcommittee and conference committees recommends. I think I'll let the secretary do that. Secretary will repeat and report that.
Senator St. John from the Subcommittee on Conference Committees report recommends that the following senators be, and they hereby are, appointed as a conference committee on House File Number 2171. Senators Ingebrigtsen, Gazelka, Carlson, Dietzick, and Miller. Senator St. John moves that the foregoing appointments be approved.
On that motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Senator St. John.
Mr. President, business of the day now. Excuse me, Mr. President. You've got those.
There being no objections, the following senators are excused. Senator Sharon all day. Senator Jungbauer, 450 to the end. Senator Peterson, 450 to 515. Senator Hand, 450 to 520. Senator Pappas, 6 p.m. till the end. Senator St. John.
Mr. President, just a short announcement. Senate Republicans will meet in room 318 in 15 minutes, or frankly, as quickly as you can get there. Senate leadership in room 208 right away. And with that, Mr. President, I would move that we adjourn until Thursday, April 26th at 1 o'clock.
On that motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign. Senate is adjourned.